Welcome to Food Talk. I'm Teresa.
And I'm Pat. We are part of North Coast Food Web, working to build healthy communities in our region through food and agriculture.
Today on Food Talk, we are talking about Thanksgiving celebrations. Thanksgiving is coming up, and we're talking about the celebrations. And with us, we have Rod Nichols.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us today, Rod.
Thanks for inviting me.
So, you are most welcome.
So Rod is a fellow member of North Coast Food Web, and he has a lot of experience cooking for large crowds. And Rod, maybe tell us a little bit about some of your cooking experiences and why you are the person to talk to you about.
Sure. Thanksgiving. First thing I think of at Thanksgiving is spending the week before Thanksgiving getting ready for it. buying food, storing food, figuring out cooking schedules, storage schedules, and then figuring out a way to warm 12 pans in a oven that holds three. So that's what Thanksgiving means.
So you have a background both in restaurant work and then in also cooking for community kitchens. I know you spent some years cooking for Loaves and Fishes here in Astoria for the senior meals.
Yeah, 2 years doing the senior meal program in Astoria.
Yeah.
Yes. I know the senior meal is an everyday kind of thing. Do they do something special for Thanksgiving
for
local seniors?
On the holidays, there's usually a much bigger meal and a much bigger crowd that shows up. Like I said, it usually involves several days of planning instead of coming in that morning and figuring out what to have for lunch. And the biggest trick is always that alignment of oven space and storage space.
I think at any scale, that's the thing that you really are challenged with.
Yeah. So I'm curious, with Thanksgiving, as we all think about how rapidly that's coming upon us, what's your favorite way to celebrate the day?
Ah, yes. Doing dishes.
Yes.
meaning that
well,
it's
a necessary way.
Yeah. It means that everything has been successful, that we've gotten through the meal. It's always a celebration leading up to it because it involves including several people in the prep and the cooking. And I see more of the celebration there than I actually do in the dining room. Huh. That's where I spend my time. So my Thanksgiving crowd is always in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And instead of myself and perhaps one other doing prep, there may be four or five other people joining me. And so it becomes a holiday in that manner.
I think there's something really wonderful that happens when people cook food together or prepare food, get ready to cook food. That's just a really wonderful way to spend time with people.
Well, and given how infrequently we all cook nowadays, and especially cooking together with a group of people is wonderful. I know Thanksgiving is often a time of year when we associate spending time with family, and certainly that's what a lot of people do. But I also, for a number of years now, certainly since I've lived in Oregon, about the past decade, my husband Packy and I, we haven't gone to see family. We've stayed here, and usually there's been reasons we can't leave the farm or there's other stuff going on. I just kind of hate to travel this time of year anyway. Mm-hmm. We've been very fortunate to have been adopted by a family here on the North Coast, but we've also spent a number of holidays in our past in those kind of orphan holiday meal gatherings.
Where a bunch of people come together.
And yeah, I love those. I think that oftentimes there's so much pressure in family gatherings. And people bring so many expectations to the table. And sometimes it's really nice when you can just step aside from that and just be with maybe your family of choice. And those can be really fun celebrations. And yeah. And kind of a potluck atmosphere, too. I love it when different people bring different parts of the meal together, so it takes some of the pressure off your host.
Yeah, absolutely. Tom and I started a new tradition last year, now that we're retail busy during the holidays, and our families are, well, his is in Portland, so we certainly could go spend some time, but mine is a little bit more far-flung. So we started last year combining my two favorite things, one of which is, of course, food, and the other one is what I call jammy days, which are those rare occasions where I get to be home, usually by myself, And I don't get out of my pajamas, and I just do whatever I want to do. So this is kind of a foreign concept to Tom, but we talked about it last year and agreed we'd give it a try. So we do Jammy Day on Thanksgiving, complete turkey dinner.
But in your pajamas.
But in our pajamas. At home, just the two of us. We're doing it again this year.
That sounds pretty ideal. That sounds pretty ideal. So turkey, let's talk about turkeys.
Turkey.
Because I confess I do really love roasted turkey. I would just find it really hard to be vegetarian because this is like one of those days where there's something about it. And I know turkey has, what is it? Is it tryptophan?
Tryptophan.
It's like a good for your mood.
So, make you sleepy.
Sleep agent too. So they're just roasted turkey and then gravy. That's definitely one of those key things. I go big on the starches for Thanksgiving. I like both mashed potatoes and stuffing.
Of course. With gravy.
Because I can't, and gravy. Vegetable sides, yes.
Yes. Brussels sprouts.
I love Brussels sprouts. There's a lot of other things people have some really, so okay, where do you guys stand on sweet potatoes? Like the whole sweet potato yam thing.
Sweet potatoes are great minus the marshmallow goo stuff.
And I'm curious where that started, because that's just kind of gross to me. But I love like more savory sweet potatoes.
It started along with the introduction of Jell-O, I would imagine.
Yeah, so yes. Kind of that whole 1950s yes, thing,
it's,
right?
It's great decoration and easy to consume.
So. Yeah. Ooh, sweetens them up. Right.
So I was thinking about turkeys, and we talked a little bit about, and we've talked in the past to some of our ranchers here on the coast that raise heritage turkeys. Mm. And there's, you may have read in the news about heritage turkeys and are curious about them. They are different than the turkeys that you would get at the supermarket.
They are
just,
definitely.
I mean, literally just a completely different breed. Very similar in different ways. You cook them slightly differently. But their flavor was amazing, I will say, the ones that I have had in the past. And if you're curious about heritage turkeys at all, it might be a little challenging to find. I do know of one ranch here on the coast that is supplying them this year, which is OK Ranch and Retreat down in Bay City. And I know you can find them on Local Harvest and on the North Coast Food Guide, which is northcoastfood.org. You can find their contact information. I'm pretty sure they still had heritage turkeys available if you were interested in trying one of those. And they would be able to give you tips on how to cook that as well.
And for those people that do that are planning on cooking a Thanksgiving turkey, I read a fabulous article in Cooks Illustrated that had a really, really interesting way to cook a heritage turkey that I thought sounded fairly simple, although it did involve a few knife skills at the beginning, and winding up with turkey breast and dark meat that's done really nicely, because that's one of the things with heritage is they don't have that big, broad breast like the turkeys that we're used to in the grocery store. So if you're looking for some tips, check out the Cook's Illustrated article. It was really informative.
And I think the preparation of turkey is always preceded by the viewing of the Sarah Palin interview of a few years ago, that Thanksgiving's just not complete without it.
I will say, too, I'm kind of amazed at all the different ways that people have found to cook turkeys, and like quirky ways. The whole like deep frying the turkey, yum. And the whole there's the brining.
Right, that's the current craze
deep frying of
web views right now is the thousand.
Oh, the ways to set your house on fire.
The ways to explode your turkey.
Yeah. I will say this, and oftentimes, you know, when you think about holiday meals, and there's all this pressure to get things right, and I know I've attended many, many perfect holiday meals, and they don't really stick out in my mind, but the one that really sticks out in my mind was the year that my dad decided to cook the Thanksgiving turkey, and he wanted to do like a rotisserie on our barbecue. And so he got the turkey all trussed, and it was on the rotisserie, and it was beautifully rotisserieing round and round, and you know, the barbecue is closed, the grill is closed, and it was getting pretty close to being done, and we were working on all the other stuff in the kitchen. And suddenly there was this explosion, and the turkey, the whole back end of the turkey had just exploded.
Would be memorable.
And it was like a huge boom, and it was just blump, 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 because it had fallen off the rotisserie and was just like whacking against the grill. I haven't laughed that hard in so many years, and my poor dad was just mortified, and we just sort of salvaged it. There was actually a fair amount to salvage, and it tasted great, and we were still able to make some gravy, but that is such a memorable meal. And so what I hope for people, too, is that If things don't go right in your Thanksgiving meal, that you find a way to find amusement in that and just recognize how funny that can be, because those are the ones you're really going to remember.
Yeah.
You know, when the sink overflows or when...
Yep, I can remember the year in being in Arizona for Thanksgiving, and the day before Thanksgiving, there was a news story about the threat of a poisoned turkey.
Oh,
and
no.
So everyone was throwing their turkeys out on Thanksgiving. So.
What?
Jeez.
Oh, okay.
That's
okay.
Crazy.
Well, hopefully that won't happen this year.
So one of my fond memories of Thanksgiving was when I was still in Denver, and we would go to family for Thanksgiving Day. And then the Sunday after Thanksgiving, I cooked a turkey at home. Because for me, Thanksgiving is all about the leftovers.
Oh, yeah.
You've got to have turkey sandwiches, mm-hmm. and there's got to be some sort of a casserole in there, and you got to have the carcass to make soup. So if I go to someone else's house, I don't have that. So that became a tradition for a number of years, was the second Thanksgiving.
Which is also a curse for some people, the amount of leftovers.
Yes, very
which
true.
Which goes back to the planning. And a very simple part of the equation of planning is, how many pounds of food are you preparing for each person? It's a step that's often overlooked, and after you finish the meal, you realize that all of your guests cannot consume 12 pounds of food. So you have food for...
I'm not sure
about
that.
At least a month.
On Thanksgiving Day.
All right, know your crowd then.
Yeah. Yes.
I probably could. Mm-hmm. I will say that one of my favorite things, the year that I learned how to make gravy... was just an epic feeling of having conquered something that made me feel so good about myself. And so I want to talk about making gravy, because mm-hmm. I just feel like, I mean, of all the days to just like set aside your strict meal issues and just go for it, gravy makes everything better in my mind. So you take the drippings, if you're roasting your turkey, and this would be hard to do if you're deep frying it or one of those things, but assuming that you are roasting your bird and you do have some drippings in the pan, so you take your drippings and you mix them with flour, some flour. And I wrote down my proportions here because I looked it up before I came. And the recipe that I've used had about 4 tablespoons of fat to 3 tablespoons of flour. But I kind of eyeball it. So, you know, but that's if you've never made gravy before, it's good to kind of go with that proportion. And you put it in a saucepan. I'm looking at Pax. I'm like,
question.
Well, I still don't have confidence in my gravy. But this is what,
just put the roaster pan on the burner.
Well, and some people do that too. You just put the roasting pan on the burner, and then you mix the flour in with the fat, and you kind of want to keep stirring it because you're trying to take that raw flour taste mm-hmm. away and make what's called a roux. And then you really slowly add liquid. And I know some mm-hmm. people use stock, and some people use milk, and some people use water. And I've just used water because if your turkey is flavorful enough.
Yeah. I've heard some people use cognac also.
Oh.
That's a delicious
really? You've
add?
Done that one?
Well, a dollop in with any of the other liquids.
Okay, yeah. That would be awesome.
So I actually have a different approach on gravy, and
okay,
it's a make-ahead thing, which I really love. So I've collected Thanksgiving recipes over the years and keep trying things. And this gravy is a winner. So it starts with homemade chicken stock, and then using that as a base with the turkey necks and pieces, and because I'm spatchcocking or taking the backbone out of my turkey.
Say that one again.
Sorry. So if you cut the backbone out of poultry, so it opens up like a book.
Yeah.
It cooks faster, and then I use that back to flavor the
and
broth.
What was that word?
It's called spatchcocking. And I
have never heard that word before.
So that's a nifty technique that we can talk about sometime. But the make-ahead gravy. So you've got this beautiful stock, and then, and there is a word for this, and I don't remember what it is, where you make a paste of butter and flour, mix that all together. So you've got this beautiful
not cooked,
paste,
but just raw.
Just raw.
Okay.
And then, like a ball or a tablespoon at a time, gets dropped into this stock, and you thicken that, and actually thicker than what your gravy is going to be. So that you can do, I don't know, up to a couple days ahead, and that's in the refrigerator. So that's the gravy base. And then when your turkey roasts and you've got all those beautiful drippings, you pour those off into a cup, pull off the fat, and then you put your gravy base on the stove to warm up, and you just add the drippings to add the additional flavor. So it's most of the work of the gravy is done ahead of time, and it's just that last minute warming it up and adding the drippings. And
oh,
it's
good
got
Lord,
some white
that
wine.
Sounds
and
so good.
It's amazing. Absolutely amazing. We've been using that recipe for, I think, close to 20 years now. And it's the one my daughter calls going, Mom, are you going to make the gravy? It's just called the gravy in our house.
Okay.
It's fabulous.
I want to make the gravy this year. So if you're just joining us, you're listening to Food Talk. And today we're talking about Thanksgiving celebrations with Rod Nichols. And Pat and I and Marianne is chiming in when needed to offer some wonderful tips about Thanksgiving meals and what we like to cook. What are some of our ideas? What are we looking forward to?
So, Rod, I'm curious. You were talking about the prep, getting people together. I know that's something, because oftentimes Thanksgiving dinner is one of the bigger meals that people might tackle. What kind of tips do you have for our listeners about prepping ahead of time?
Start earlier than Thanksgiving.
Step one.
But what are the things that you can make ahead of time?
If you're cooking for a large crowd, you have to cook everything in advance. And then you're basically reheating the day of the event. The mashed potatoes, the yams, the stuffing, even the turkeys. The turkeys are cooked ahead and then warmed because it takes a lot less time to warm something than to cook something. You're just trying to it also depends on what your oven space is. If you have a large kitchen and lots of ovens, then you can cook a lot more things that day. But if you're limited in oven space, then you have to plan for how long it takes to warm everything up. And then find ways to keep them warm, and that's always the big trick of serving crowds. But doing home cooking, if you're doing 20 people or less, then you can probably do the majority of the cooking that day. But things like mashed potatoes, stuffing, are all things that easily can be done the day ahead and hold very well and reheat, and sometimes are better reheated than they are the day that you make them.
I think at the very least, you can do a lot of chopping ahead because there's a lot of chopping and prep involved. Or if you're going to be making pies, you can make your pie crust ahead of time. And those are things that, you know, for pie crusts, especially if you've never made a pie and you want to make a pie, I love pie and I love making pies. And I will also say that it's much nicer to make a pie not under pressure. Because if you have any issues with your crust at all and you're having that issue on the day of Thanksgiving, that's a little stress-inducing. So things like that I think are really great to make ahead, at the very least making the crust ahead and see if you're going to have any issues with rolling it out. I know, Rod, you're quite the pie person. What's your favorite crust?
To start with the crust, you want to do it the day ahead at least, even if you're just refrigerating. The crusts are always better if they're made and get a chance to relax and then bring them back out before you're making the pie. And then even once you've put them into the pie dish, let them relax again in the refrigerator before you fill it.
Do you make just a pure butter crust or do you put shortening in yours?
I can't say that I've ever made the same recipe twice.
Really? For pie crust?
Pie crust. I have general proportions of of butter, shortening, sometimes all butter, sometimes add a little bourbon. There's lots of variations. And when you're measuring things, especially if you're just measuring flour out with a cup measuring instead of by weight, it's going to be different every time. So the amount of binders, such as the butter and the shortening that you're adding to it, the fats, if you measure them equally and you don't measure the flour equally, you're going to have a different recipe every time anyway. So you just do it by feel and just keep throwing things in the, either do it by hand or into the blender, however you're making the crust. So
pie crust, I swear, was going to be the death of me. My mother makes the most amazing pies. And she does that. Well, you just do this, you know, and she's done them for so long. She just kind of puts everything in. And in her head, she knows the proportions, but doesn't necessarily communicate those well. She has shown me, I don't know how many times, how to make pie crust the way she does it. And she doesn't let her crust relax after she mixes it. And so she has this like it looks really shaggy. It doesn't even really completely come together. And she sort of throws it out and she starts rolling it. And this, it magically transforms into this beautiful crust. And so I was always trying to replicate that. Couldn't, still after all these years, couldn't do it. But I finally learned the way that works for me. And again, having the proportions in your head is important. But the technique, because I love working with my hands. So I use my hands to rub the butter into the flour. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then when that's all at that small peas kind of thing, then putting the water in, and I mix that with my hand. There's something about having my hands in it.
You're going to end up with a better result doing it by hand most often, because the blender can very easily overblend.
Yeah.
If you've blended all of the fats into the flour so that they're smooth, you're not going to end up with a flaky crust, because there isn't the butter or the whatever fat you've put in there doesn't have a chance to form air pockets within the flour.
And that's what makes that beautiful flaky.
That's right. Mm.
Yeah, that's what I'd always understood, that when you rub butter in by hand, because some of the pieces are larger and some are smaller,
you want to make sure that there's some chunks left in there.
Yeah, that unevenness is what creates the more flakiness. So for those of you out there that are rolling your eyes and this whole, like, it's just in my head and I just understand the proportions, I don't do that. I absolutely have to follow a recipe because pie crust still kind of terrifies me. And for whatever reason,
works for you.
Basically, yeah. I think that's the other thing that's intimidating about cooking from scratch for a lot of people, is that there's this perception out there that there's a right way and a wrong way to do it. And I think with baking, there is. I mean, there's a science in baking, and there's reasons why some of those proportions are the way they are, because you're looking for chemical reactions to get, you know, cakes to rise or bread to rise.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times, you know, if it tastes good to you and that's how you like to do it, then that's awesome and wonderful.
Yeah.
I know people that like to make very lumpy mashed potatoes. I know people that put their potatoes through a ricer to get like the smoothest mashed potatoes out there. And I don't think there's a right or a wrong way. Some people leave the skins on. Some people are adamant that you have to peel your potatoes.
Even the pie crust doesn't have to be flaky. It can still taste good without being flaky.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, if you want to bake a lot, and have a consistent product, a scale is the way to go.
Yeah.
Measuring stuff by cups is just crazy because it's never the same way twice.
But so what do you do when you're looking at a recipe in a cookbook and it says 2 cups of flour?
You weigh 2 cups of flour, then you know what it weighs.
So you do the same thing all the time. And if you
Assuming it was successful the first time.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, but
if you haven't yet invested in a scale, I will say that the one thing that you really need to master is to scoop the cup into the flour. Don't shake it. Or if you shake it, do it every time. But don't, you know, best not to shake it. Scoop it in, level it off. That's your cup of flour. So it is at least going to be consistent over time.
Right.
But, man, Marianne is so right. Scale is the
so
way to
fast,
go.
So fast, so easy, so no guesswork.
Yep.
And also, I am in awe of people who do the butter by hand, but I like a pastry blender, the hand kind.
Oh, yeah, that's what my
with the
mom
little
does.
Blades.
Yeah.
Because I get there faster, and so I feel like the butter stays colder. I have no idea. That is so not scientific. That's an opinion. but that's my method of choice for blending the butter or the shortening is with one of those little hand pastry blenders.
I think
blenders.
That qualifies as still by hand.
So, yeah.
My arm feels like it's by hand.
There's no
Some of those old tools still work great.
Absolutely. So I also want to say that, you know, Thanksgiving and the holiday season coming up, I think it's a good time. Mm. You know, you do, whether you're gathering with family or friends or whatever that is, you know, it's a great time to get together, to share food together. That's one of the best things about celebrations is that you're sitting down with people and sharing meals. You know, for a lot of people, it's also a very stressful time mm-hmm. of year. There's a lot of hunger in our community, and there's a lot of people who aren't able to afford to cook a meal for themselves or don't have family to spend it with. And so there are definitely places out there where you can find assistance. There are community meals. And Rod, maybe can you give people some? I'm just trying to think of like brainstorming some ideas and talking to the local food bank.
If you have access to the internet at the library or wherever, you can go to the Clatsop Community Action and then click on the food bank, and you will find a list of food meal sites.
Mm-hmm.
And there will be meal sites in your community all over the county that are going to be serving Thanksgiving dinner. So that's the first thing I would do to get a really nice hot meal. And in thinking about that, I also want to let everybody know about the Warming Center, which is a brand new project in Astoria for people to get warm and very close within walking distance of the Loaves and Fishes. So could have a meal and then go get warm down at the old senior center that's being refurbed. So
it's
going to be open really soon.
Yes, before the remodeling project takes place, it is now being used again as an emergency warming center. So
that's great.
I just want to encourage that, you know, if you are at a loose end this holiday season and maybe you don't have family to spend this with, maybe call one of those community centers in your area and see if they need volunteers to help cook or
they
prepare
do.
Or serve those meals. I think they always need volunteers. And that is a really great way to be part of a group, to really feel like you're doing something good on the holidays. And even if you do have family and friends to spend it with, maybe think about taking some time to help out and make one of those community meals happen. I also really want to encourage people, if you can set an extra place at your table, maybe think about the people in your lives that may be at a loose end this year. You know, do you know someone at work or just in your community who might be by themselves? And maybe invite them and extend your friends and family
suggestion.
A little bit more. It's, to me, there's so much about building community. There's an opportunity here that we have to sit down and eat together.
Not just Thanksgiving. I have a question for the three of you. To me, the turkey or the ham or the whatever, the tofurkey, is not the thing.
No.
So I'm interested more in side dishes. Mm. Like, I would just like to do... I would just eat side dishes. So I would like from each one of you in the time we have left to hear about some like special thing you do. That we've already done potatoes, but what?
Yeah.
Most lately, it has been Brussels sprouts. Tom loves Brussels sprouts, and from Jim Dixon, the olive oil guy in Portland, very simple recipe, caramelizing Brussels sprouts, fresh Brussels sprouts, in olive oil. Of course, he's the olive oil guy, and turning it down really low. So they're cooking for probably about 20-30 minutes. So they're getting really soft and caramelized at the same time. And at the very end, stirring in a tablespoon, I think is the amount, of a nice coarse grained mustard.
Mm. Oh, wow.
It is so delicious and really super simple and definitely on our table again this year.
I think my favorite, one of my favorite side dishes is really a condiment. It's a cranberry. Mm. Just we have fresh cranberries in our area. And I think take advantage of that and make a fresh cranberry relish. And they're very simple. There's a lot of variations out there. And it's basically just cooking the cranberries with some sugar. I've added orange peel, different spices to it. But it's more of a chutney than like that kind of traditional cranberry that comes out of a can. But it's wonderful. It's beautiful. You can use fresh local cranberries. And it's delicious with anything that you're – it doesn't have to just be for Thanksgiving. So I would encourage that.
Yeah, and I think of many things roasted, that almost every dish has to have something that's been toasted, whether it's pine nuts, add them to a rice. Many years for family Thanksgiving meals, instead of turkey, I would do a whole side of salmon, and
would
always involved a rice and toasted pine nuts.
Mm.
Which are a little more difficult to find these days, or affordably.
Yeah.
So there
That's
are certainly
the
other options of hazelnuts or pecans, walnuts, many substitutes.
Yeah.
Just roasting vegetables, caramelizing the onions, everything has that.
Yeah.
That glaze to it.
Mm. So. Well, I'm hungry now. I can't wait for Thanksgiving. I hope that wherever you are, you have a great meal. And thank you so much for joining us for Food Talk. And thanks to our engineer, Marianne, to Luke and Katie for our theme song.